Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago, and of course, welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM. Dave in your company all the way until 6 o'clock. I'm moving up very shortly, you know, as we wind things down. I got now eyeline. Today was a very interesting day. It was one of those type of shows. So I want to welcome with me, it's the now time for the segment Police and You. So I have with me Sergeant Small as usual and PC Adrian Seeley. So I want you guys to unmute your mics and say good afternoon to Trinidad and Tobago. Hello.
Good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, all right. Blessed and wonderful afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. Also a pleasure to be here.
Nice, man. I like how the thing going. I'm going to see. Wait, I'm trying to fix something here, but I ain't too thing there. Wait, but where is this? Exit that. All right, good. So, guys, welcome to the program, Police and You. Now, I don't know if you all were listening earlier. I hope you all were, because I had a segment on with a gentleman that lived that life, nobody, you know, and he came and we didn't get much, because there was so much to cover. But this man rebranded himself, having gone through the mill with communities and the negative aspects that it brings, especially in single parent homes. And he's now doing his own thing, has a little company, a little business he started up as an entrepreneur, you know, having passed through the remand section of the jail, go through the court system, you know. So, I mean, we delve a little bit on the community policing aspect, but we couldn't speak much on it. So I have to do a part two to that. So that is the direction I want to take the conversation this afternoon, in terms of what are the police really doing? What are you guys' strategies in terms of not just trying to eradicate the criminal elements, but to help them? Because I think it goes more than just getting rid of the elements, the drugs, the guns on the streets, but to fill that void. Because you take all these things, they're no longer there. You know, what proactive approach is the community policing department taking? You know, and I will allow Sergeant Small to kick things off, and then we'll tell the story of Adrian, PC Adrian Seeley.
Awesome, thank you very much. I just want to say to Trinidad and Tobago that community policing is a policing strategy that promotes partnership between the police and the community. It allows for us to really work together hand in hand, as we have done, you know, over the years. In particular, Adrian will definitely tell a story, but it's so important to be that proactive about policing. You know, when they look at crime and they look at the root causes to crime, things like poverty, things, you know, plenty of different factors, you know, that probably lead persons to wanting to embark on a life of criminal activity. Mm-hmm. Now, we understand, you know, the importance of getting into root causes. Not that we as an organization have all the resources, but we partner with a lot of organizations like Ministry of Social Development, Ministry of New Development and National Service. And then also we have our police youth clubs in Trinidad and Tobago. We have 99 police youth clubs where we have over 6,000 a membership of over 6,000. And, you know, we have officers that are committed to really mentoring and empowering these young people. It's important to, you know, teach people how to fish. And that is exactly what we do in terms of core developmental value areas like education, sports, environment, working in the community, leadership, you know. So it's really important to teach people different avenues that they wouldn't necessarily feel that they have to resort to a life of crime. You know, it's important for them to understand the options available. So, you know, we network with so many different agencies like YTEP, CCC, MILAC, other agencies to just show the youths how many alternatives it have. And even when they have challenges within their home, within the community, it have ways that we could resolve it, as opposed to resorting to physical violence and crime, you know?
I'm not knocking it to say, but I'm speaking because I'm passionate when it comes to these things. And I am not certain, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm outside looking in, how you know, viable the MILAT and the WITEP programs have been with really helping the youths. I mean, What did they get from that they can make themselves sustainable, sustain themselves start a business, because we don't open a parlor. Let's be real, guys. We do not open a shop to sell items. And only when a business, when a man walks into the shop and asks for a tin of juice and pays us, then we take his money, run to the supermarket or the wholesalers, buy the juice and come back and give him. What I'm getting at is that we have to have a capital, some sort of financial backing in order to stock this shop. And let's be real. These youths coming out of Mailata and White Up and stuff who learn to sew and do different things, I mean, without employment, how are they getting that money, boy, to really, if it's masonry, to get the chowel and the levels and get the tools, you know, I mean, who they gonna depend on, you know, what programs it have to say that they, if they start to work here, you know, they could develop some skills, get a stipend to probably, I don't know, I'm just asking, I don't know.
Well, I mean, in agriculture, I saw recently in the Ministry of Agriculture, where they're given a number of grants, they have ongoing training that that person's really benefited from NEDCO over the years. I know many people who benefit from, you know, a little bit like NEDCO, and they were able to venture into even bigger things. So it has, I mean, the banks, all the financial institutions, as far as I'm aware, they offer, you know, loans. And I mean, even with Mylat and the Police Youth Club and these things, I have seen how many of them became law enforcement officers, like, you know, in the police service, in the army, well, in defense force and a whole, in terms of army and coast guard and so on, you know, we had the auxiliary fire. So there are many avenues in terms of, I know people personally who stay out of a life of crime, you know, ensure that they had a great sense of discipline and respect and that kind of thing. They went through the process, I mean, with good recommendations from key people, it helped them. And that's why it's important to maintain a good character, be respectful in the community. Because when you do background checks, you might think you fit the criteria and you go back in the community and you ask what kind of person this person is, boy, and you hear the little feedback, you realize that all that deterrent ain't gold. But the opportunities are there, and it's just for people to, you know, be patient. I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day. Things don't happen overnight. When I was 18 years old, I wasn't able to join the police service. One time I joined at the age of 20. At the end of the day, that wasn't the first thing that I ever did. I work on construction, I work in the grocery. So things doesn't just happen with the snap of a finger and it just happening everything one time. When I finished school, I only passed 3 subjects. I was able to repeat. I was able to get 7 subjects. And then I went on to, you know, applying for the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, went through the application process, and I did prepare. So you might think I applied to become a police and that is that. You had dictation, you had exams, literal exams that you had to do. So I used to be home preparing, and my sisters reading over stories, some from the papers and from books, just to be able to, you know, write down the correct words and learn to spell words. So everything that you do in life, preparation is important. You just can't rock back and say nothing in working pay, and you're doing nothing to elevate and prepare yourself. I would have gone on to do an associate degree in occupational health and safety. Right now, I'm looking around about, you know, going to start a bachelor's or a master's or something. But the key thing is to keep on empowering yourself. If it's to do a short course self, it wouldn't be a waste, you know?
Well, as you mentioned that, you know, we are now 18 after the hour 5 o'clock. We want to make this hour a very interesting one. I want to turn the steering wheel over to PC Adrian Seely. But before we do that, I would like Sergeant Small to really introduce PC Seely to us. And, I mean, I can do it, but I want the sergeant, because I know you played a very influential role in this gentleman's life. So nobody better to bring him into the Freedom 106.5 FM family than you.
Yes. Let me introduce one of the most humble, respectful, disciplined young men I have ever met in my entire life. And more so since I have, you know, joined the police service 20 years ago. This young man is a young man that stood out to me. I met him in the enterprise community. When I met him, he had already participated in something called the International Visitors Leadership Program, even before he was a police officer. That is to show you how, you know, once you have a high sense of discipline, the sky's the limit. He won the, I think it's the International Peace Award for making kindness contagious initiative within the enterprise community, his home community. And he's also the leader of Crown Trace United Youth Empowerment Committee.
Crown Trace?
So, other than PC, and he's a martial artist. You would have seen an article over some years ago called Karate Cup. This is the Karate Cup. So, without delay, Adrian Seeley.
Good afternoon, Adrian.
Hey, pleasant good afternoon once again. I am in awe with that introduction. Multi-talented, I must say, and I must, you know, say that I learned quite a lot, and I continue to learn quite a lot, you know, from Sergeant J.C. Small. And it's good that, you know, we acknowledge when somebody makes a positive contribution in your life. So publicly, thank you very much, Sergeant Small, and thank you, Freedom 106.5, for having me.
Well, we are glad to have you. And I mean, Sergeant and I spoke earlier today, and I told him about an individual. And Sarge, I eventually got onto the young man, and he came on the program and spoke.
Awesome.
Yeah,
all
praise. I mean, he came in for high commendations, and PC Seeley, I was told about you and where you began and where you are today. And I must say, I'm extremely proud of you, buddy. I am extremely proud of you because you came from Enterprise. That is a very troubled community, a very troubled area. We see it in the news. It's branded as a hot spot. You almost feel like when you're in that area, like you could die at any point in time. I have driven through that area many times, sometimes accidentally, you know. Waze would carry you through there as a quick way to get to wherever you're going. And I see the community. So I want to ask you, I mean, I don't know if you just went there in your later years or if you were born and bred and grew up there, you know, what was it like coming through that a community like that, and what drove you to becoming a police officer today where you are now a positive influence to give back? I would like you to share your story.
Certainly. Just before I get there, there's something I want to comment on in terms of the opening comment, in terms of policing operations, as the case may be.
Uh-huh.
You know, many times people will think that the police are here, and it was mentioned, to eradicate persons. I could say from being within the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, that's not our function. We do not eradicate anyone. We are guided by the law, and we uphold the law. And once it is that we are placed in a situation where our life is under imminent danger of death or grievous bodily harm, as to anyone, we have to take certain actions to really protect ourselves and by extension, the wider community.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to touch on that perception. And I already start on that note, because you see the perception many times that, you know, we have of persons or even of a particular place, many times wouldn't be as a result of our direct interaction or involvement or experience. I would have born and grew, and I still live in the community of Enterprise, Crown Trees to be exact.
Wow.
And I would say, without reservation, by far and large, as mentioned by our newly minted first woman commissioner of police, Miss Ulla Christopher, is just a handful of persons who really hold the community and by extension the country at siege. And I could say that from a first-hand experience, being a civilian in the community of Crown Trees and now being a person who is in law enforcement and still live and operate within the community without any sort of harm or anything like that. No. But to really touch on it, and as mentioned by the young man who came on earlier on today.
Oh, you heard him?
I myself grew up in it. No, but I didn't hear him, but you really gave a good overview.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Of some of the experiences that he would have had. And yes. I too share some of those experiences, you know. It is what it is. I myself would have grown up without my biological father taking an active role in my life, you know, from early as probably the age of 2, 3. And just being brutally honest with your listening audience, I cannot really recount of any activities with my biological father.
Wow.
But thankfully, you know, my mom, she was really committed. And I have a great degree of respect for our women in society. Sometimes they don't really get that recognition that they deserve, you know, but she held down the household, I being the last of 3 boys. And in doing so, I had a lot of unsupervised time, more or less to move around, do what I like in the community at a very early age. I mean, thankfully, I didn't get involved in any gun or drug violence. However, if it wasn't for the intervention of Sergeant J.C. Small and my deceased martial arts instructor, Shian Kalaitone, I am certain I would not have been having this conversation with you at this present time. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe I would have either been incarcerated or I would have been deceased.
I appreciate your honesty.
And that's the reality of the context here. You know, so from my early age, I was on the streets. I wasn't going to school because, again, mommy not around. So I know what time she leaves home. I know what time she comes home. So I'm already there on the streets. But one of the interesting things, and I think you may be able to agree and back me up here, when it is that you ask a child, a boy or girl, you know, what you want to be when you grow up, many times you'll hear them saying, I want to be a police officer, I want to be a fireman, I want to be an army man.
True.
But something really happens whereby these same boys and girls, as they grow, they tend to see law enforcement and those in the authority as the enemy.
Yeah.
And that's where the perception or the misconception or the misperception really kicks in. I myself would have fallen into that frame of mind. I am not a police officer, so I can speak to that. Sometimes by our action in law enforcement, we buy into that narrative. And I mean that by saying that we have to be aware the criminal elements, they are not foolish. They understand that in the at-risk communities, be it poverty, be it persons growing up in single parents in home, and that push and pull factor, they provide that illusion of, here's what, I will be your father. I will be the one, you know, to buy that sneakers for you, to take you out and whatnot. Yes. And right there and then, what we have is a degree of leading them down a particular path of ready destruction, living a life of crime. But it doesn't start off like that. It starts off with favors, with giving them things that, you know, that they want, things that they yearn. But there's a payback. You know, so we have to be cognizant of this. And in terms of the police in action now, when it is that we see the youths on the corner, probably actively engaging a football, a game of basketball, or just they're not breaking any law, committing any infringements. Our interaction, how we engage with them, as opposed, you know, to have this stern face, this stern look, you know, only there when it is that they do something wrong, we buy it, we more or less fulfill that misconception. So from the community policing standpoint, when I met a Sergeant J.C. Small and Dandy, and, you know, they were really on the ground interacting with the youths in a positive light, you would have made the, you'd have asked the question, and I'm happy you did, because we need to be real, and we need to just, you know, get away from just saying anything that really sounds good.
Yes.
So when you ask the question, what, you know, are some of these programs you in YTEP at ALTA? What are they really doing? And I again can say, having been a part of the community police now for just over 3 years and partnering with some of these organizations, not only do they provide the technical abilities, but for instance, we did a barbering program, and at the end of the barbering program, you know what YTEP did? They provided the barbering equipments for the youths so they can also have a start.
That is what we're talking about.
In addition to... Yes, in addition to, you know, the financial management, because the thing about it, if it is that we give the youths and them a trade whereby they can really earn, and we have to be real as well, for various reasons, not everyone is academically inclined.
Indeed so.
But plenty of the youths, they have natural talents with their hand, be it sport, be it poetry, be it singing. So once it is that we are able to help them harness and really mold their talents, in addition to teaching them that financial aspect of it, what we are really doing is gearing up and helping them to really have a solid platform. One other thing I will say, and I know time is limited, and you know the passion is there, so I will pause just now, but one of the other things that we realize from the community standpoint is that we cannot only work with the youths, we also need to work with the parents. Many times we fail to recognize the parents of today. They themselves were disenfranchised or misguided youths of yesterday. And if it is we are ready to positively rehabilitate and mold and shape the minds of the youths through positive mentoring, because not all mentoring is positive, we also need to do some programs with the parents as well. So that way now, the parents will be able to echo the sentiments that is really being said by the facilitators who would have been vetted. So that way around now, we are able to develop a holistic program to really shape and mold the minds of these youths and ensure that they could be meaning, how to say, contributors to the development of Trinidad and Tobago.
You know, one of the things I discovered with the gentleman that came on this afternoon was fairly along the same lines. Poverty, single parent, watching our boy have, wanting our boy thing, and that embrace of the gang leaders or the mature ones, the mature criminal minds in the society, watching these young ones and embracing them. You say you check the man, you ask him for $3 so you could buy a Tampico, and he had 20 in some instance, you just have 40 in your hand. Now you just wanted that $3 to get a little juice and maybe a biscuit, you know, just to eat something, a little snack now, boy. But when you get a whole 20 or 40 in your hand, you see, I run him and give mommy a 20. Now, mother ain't asking no question because mother under pressure. And one of the things he highlighted was mother have her own pressures that she's going through, you know. So you might want to say,
certainly,
the mother blame, you're blaming the parents and say, but you're encouraging your child in the foolishness because you're taking and you're taking this stuff from them. But she's dealing with a man who mistreated her, or men who mistreated her and have her in this impoverished state, where she have 3 children. So we think in one narrative, but she's studying, you know, the man is a waste of time. That man is this man beating her. She's trying to call this one to get a little money to buy a little food for the house. He don't want to mind the child. Friends telling her why to put him in court. Mommy going through her own thing. So when her 13-year-old come with a little 100 and say, mommy, hold this now, she might want to pull him up. But circumstances, boy. So my question to you, PC Seely, is that you're back in the community, you're still there in a positive light. How are they receiving you, knowing that you are fully aware and cognizant of some of the ills that's taking place? You can't cure all, but you're aware. Is it that they hide this in your presence? When you're passing is a respect, you know, hey, Seely passing is a respect. How is it? How are they receiving you? How are you dealing with it?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I still live in the community. I have been living there in excess of 30 years, and respect really goes both ways. Mm. I have a role and function, and I've always had a role and function. Even before I was a part of the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service, as Sergeant Small mentioned, I would have worked and continue to work with a number of NGOs in the community.
Mm-hmm,
and the reality is, and it's something that was really eye-opening for me, back in 2014, through the Ministry of National Security, Citizen Security Program, I had the opportunity to travel to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, where I received some training on the organization by the name of Fight for Peace. In what you call a favela, we'll refer to it as a ghetto. And there's a silent code. And when I say a silent code, the same youths and even some of the persons who I believe are known to be in criminal activity, once it is that you are already walking that path of righteousness and already proactively helping the youths genuinely, there is a degree of respect, regardless if you're in law enforcement or not. And I'm saying that to say because I work with NGOs and persons who are not in law enforcement, who work in East Portisbane, who work in Sealots, and it's the same aspect. Now, the trick in it, or the concept, is that I'm a law enforcement officer. So I cannot and I will not see an offense being committed, in my view, one that requires immediate action, and fail to do so. However, as Sergeant Small mentioned, what we try to do is proactively work with the youths, and we do this by partnering with the schools in the communities. We do this by partnering with the different NGOs and the CBOs in the community. And we have that relationship with them whereby if it is that we are seeing any trend or any indication that this youth is going on a deviant path, what can we do to prevent it before it morph into something where they commit an offense and now they are arrested and they are going through the entire justice system? Because you know that in itself, even if it is that you come out and there was some degree of rehabilitation, there is still the stigma that you are an ex-inmate. So we do a lot of proactive work within the community. And as a result of that, and I'm really happy about it, and I hope that I'm able to convince you to some extent that, you know, if we should send you through the community of enterprise, the heart won't really be racing because it's of fright, but, you know, you'll be inspired to know that from what would have happened back in 2014, 2015, when we had that really upsurge in terms of the criminal activities, you know, we have come a very, very long way, and we are continuing on that path in terms of the positive transformation of the community. It's one of the commitments I have made personally, in the sense that, and you mentioned it, when things get bad at home, if it is that we just pick up and we run away, what is going to happen to home? We all need to come together and work together and understand what we are faced with right now in terms of the upsurge in crime and criminality in our country. The only way it will get better is if it is that we continue or we start to work together as one in terms of the positive development of the community and by extension the country. Putting on my police cap very briefly, I just want to comment on one thing.
Go ahead.
Many times we would see when persons record police using excessive force or any force in fact, and that is something that I welcome, because we are not above the law. We are more or less the protectors. So if it is that we are abusing the authority, by all means, the public have a right to be upset with it. I myself. However, when it is that police officers are doing things that are, how to say, uplifting, I want to encourage the public to recognize that as well. The criminal elements, they are utilizing technology. They are editing videos. They are removing the part when they would have done something to initiate the arrest of the officer. And think about it. No criminal element is going to put up something that making them look bad.
Mm.
They are smart. They understand the criminal justice system. They understand when it is that they go before the magistrate to say no, ma'am, and no, sir, and whatnot. They know that. So they are using technology right now to more or less work in their favor. As said by this commissioner, by past commissioners, there are elements within the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service who do not deserve to be law enforcement officers. So I want to implore the wider society, the listening audience, to help us rid the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service of such individuals. But at the same time, let us acknowledge and highlight the personnel, not just in the police service, but in national security, in the public sector, who would have gone above and beyond in times of need, be it COVID or otherwise, to really preserve and protect lives. I think once we start to go in that trajectory, we would really see the degree of harmony and that peace and that tranquility that will bring about a better Trinidad and Tobago. And that is what I have been doing along with the assistance of Sergeant J.C. Small, other officers from the Central Division Community Police, and the police service in the Central Division, by and large, in the community of enterprise, and it has been bearing fruit.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear the fact that you ended by saying it's been bearing fruit. I have a texter that asked this question about how are you guys stamping out drugs from entering the community? Because it's one thing that is already there. You may be aware of the drug block, but when you pass, nothing nefarious is happening in front of your view. As you say, nothing arrestable. But how are you, what initiatives under the community policing have you all instituted to eradicate drugs from re-entering your community? So, the drugs will finish. Eh? You have weed, you have the cocaine, the pills, what have you. People buying it, it go done. They go smoke it out, they go sniff it out, it go done. The drug block ain't going none. The weed man ain't going no more to sell. But how are we preventing it from coming in?
Well, we encourage that you see something, say something. So anyone within the community, and that is where trust come in. So all this relationship building and all these community outreach activities, is geared towards really fostering a genuine relationship with the community. And according to Sir Robert Peel, who was referred to as the father of modern day policing, the community must feel as though it is an arm of law enforcement. That is the kind of commitment residents and communities must have in terms of standing against crime and violence in the community. So when it is things happening, whoever bringing in things, whether it's, whoever, nobody in the community is supporting this because they realize they're going to destroy their children and nieces and nephews and neighbors, their family, and in turn, the community itself. So they trust us as the officers from the community police, not only us, but, you have other units functioning within the communities, and we encourage and foster and engender that type of relationship with the community that they feel comfortable to tell us when things are right. And if for some reason they do want to channel the information to us, we still have 800 save, we still have 555, we still have 999, and all the other channels whereby we can channel information in a confidential manner.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say that because I still going on the notion as, you know, silly and small, you know, convincing the youth, convincing me, because we still scared, you know. Some of us are still scared to approach a police officer or even call the police station when something negative is happening in our backyard. We're still scared because we don't know. So I'm saying, you know, you guys are doing such a great, valiant effort with the community. You know, I don't know what strategies, how else you can convince them. What have we been doing so far? Other than just telling them, well, listen, say something, see something. Yeah, we're hearing that. But Sergeant Small, can I trust you? PCC Lee, could I really trust if I tell you this? You're not going to say, I say, this is the part I want to get. How? What are you personally employing to help everyone that you come into contact with recognize that you are a safe haven and a confidential man?
Well, I mean, seeing as believing, and you know, we, in terms of confidentiality and trust and that kind of thing, is, I mean, we wouldn't spell out every situation in terms of where we intervene or where, you know, where we was able to prevent things from happening or escalating within our community. But the testimony is the voice of the people, you know, how they feel over the years. And I mean, the results were there to show in 2019, the experience, I mean, from a situation where back in 2014, 15, 16, coming up there, the police to say, by Central Police corrupt, Central Division corrupt, this, that. So where you won the IDB President's Award for Service Excellence in the Public Sector, based on our approach, based on that partnership, based on everybody playing their role effectively, including the police and the community. And we experienced an 87% reduction in murders, shootings, woundings, serious and violent crimes. So the history is there to show. Our track record speaks for itself. I even went on to win a regional award for community policing based on this approach. And I can't take the credit alone, but it was because of the essence of, you know, partnership internally, you know, in keeping it our strategic plan as an organization, and more so externally with involving other stakeholders to come on the ground and invite other residents, stakeholders, NGOs, faith-based organizations. We really work hand in hand to bring about this crime reduction. So history is there to show. We didn't just say things that didn't happen, but, you know, Google it for yourself and you will see, you know, we really won the IDB President's Award for Service Excellence. We really experienced this reduction that I'm speaking about in crime, and it was really because of partnership and working together to rid our communities of crime and criminal activities.
Well said. Well said. Well, you're convincing me. I'm getting there because, you know, I have to ask, you know, because I want persons to start to trust you all again. I want that initiative so badly because once, I believe, if this citizenry can really foster a great relationship with the TTPS, trust me, there will be nowhere for a criminal to hide. Because we know for a fact, I see something, I call the station, so happening, and they act discretion and a measure of secrecy as to where you got the information from, but they investigate and there would be no way because they might feel like they come by me and hide, or when they walk to me and say nothing, and I normal, but I don't send a message, it gets across, the police come. They can't tell whether it's me or the neighbor. But I believe
that's why we also promote the neighborhood watch group initiative. You know, we in Central Division probably are the most neighborhood watch groups in the country.
Wow.
Where we set up neighborhood watch groups almost street by street, you know, the officers at the community police center division. I must big up to Corporal Panay, you know, Corporal Cumberbatch, Corporal Commission, Officer Richards, Miss Cummings, Nurse Sandy Ford, everybody, the whole Cop Central Division, they really go above and beyond in terms of really working with community. So we set up neighborhood watch groups, and you know, anything that happened in our community and people see something just because they want themselves to be safe, trust and believe. We get the information, we're able to pass it on to our operational units, and you have quick response because of that relationship. Every day we, you know, reaching out to the communities within Central, this is something that, you know, we go by and large in terms of entire Trinidad and Tobago, you're going to see more of our officers embarking in terms of neighborhood watch group initiative and building up this network to ensure that we have resilient and safe communities. I must big up too to Mr. Darren Carmichael, probably one of these days he could come as a guest on the program, but he really worked with us too in terms of setting up neighborhood watch groups. He's one of the directors with 800 tips, and he really come on the ground with us and set up these neighborhood watch groups. So we have this network that we're trying to spread throughout Trinidad and Tobago, and it's like a safety net. So once we you know, because when the police not in the community, when officer Celia and I go in our house, we could contribute to our home community at that time. But is the people who live in the community really able to, it's like, as I said, they must feel as though they are an arm of law enforcement and we had a sense of responsibility for preventing crime and reducing crime within their communities.
Here, my next question. PC Seeley said something a few moments ago talking about there are officers within the police service that rightfully do not deserve to be there. There have been a lot of talks recently, gentlemen, about bringing on board the polygraph testing. How supportive are you guys with this initiative, and do you believe it should come? Because I think with polygraph, a trained professional should be able to identify and weed out the rogues. A lot of officers kicking up against it, seeing it as an invasion of their privacy, and what is that? But Seeley said it. He's been speaking truth since he touched on the program this afternoon with his colleague, Sergeant Small. So guys, how do you feel about the polygraph testing for all officers?
Well, to be honest, constitutionally, when it is an officer during the police service, because let me tell you something, the polygraph thing is a machine, right? But when you, better than the machine, is that when you join the police service, you took an oath of office. It's not like when you go before a judge or a justice of the peace and you swear to something, you're willing to stand before God and man and say that, you know, am I sincere about this? And, you know, everybody had a bit of people who, generally people character, everybody may have varying character. But in terms of, as I say, when you go before a judge or a justice of the peace and you swear, we as police officers, every one of us, every single one of us will have sworn before God and man in terms of our oath of office. And I think better than any polygraph, I mean, notwithstanding that we've seen officers getting arrested, yes, they make a decision, them take the chance, and you know, we have a few hundred officers probably before the court, and it goes to show that the organization is an impartial one, meaning that if its own officers get caught up in the wrongdoing, and we have the information, we're very well going to be arrested and placed before the court also. So I don't want to comment deep in terms of polygraph. That is more something in terms of government policies and our administrative policies in terms of our executive and the police service to make a decision on those things. But I think the police association is the best entity comment on behalf of police officers. I don't want to share my personal opinion, but at the end of the day, I, for officers, caring about the job, impartial, above board, and not finding themselves caught up in any aspect of corruption or dishonesty. That is just my personal view, and my stand is that, yes, you decide to become a police officer, then obey the laws and train them to be go. You do that, you breach that, you decide to go underneath and do something underhand, well, then face the consequences. That is my words to Trinidad and Tobago.
I have a call on the line. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Davey.
Good afternoon.
I'm glad that you let me in at this point in time. I just want to say to the officer, what he has said is admirable, having faith in man. But I've said before this frequency on a myriad of occasions, the FBI uses it, the Mossad uses it, the CIA uses it, many police departments on the Eastern Seaboard of the United States of America also uses it. And the reason for using the polygraph is because you would have a better idea as to who this very good officer who just spoke there is partnering to go outside. You can be an officer about your duty doing things good, and you go outside with a sour partner. Next thing, he sets you up, and is your family burying you the next day, you know? So you need to know who your partner is. Who is this man that is sitting next to me? I am aghast by stories I've heard in the police service and what I've read in the newspaper. And a police officer serving in the Chagones police station is found in the UK carrying 3 kilos of cocaine. I mean, we really and truly have a serious issue. And the polygraph is used by security services throughout the world in order to allow them to better determine who is who, because if you sit next to someone and you don't know who he is, you still may not reach home to see your family. I listen to your comments.
Sergeant Small.
But, yeah, the polygraph is a policy decision, as I said, because when I joined the police service in 2003, by law, it was like a requirement for me to participate or partake in a polygraph test, right? That's what I come in within the recent years. So the officers that joined the police service now, they mandated to polygraph before they even enter into the police service. Right, so some cleansing taking place, if it is you want to say the polygraph
Yeah, but
man who joined the police service 25 years and 30 years ago, you had to create policy to allow for him to be polygraphed. But to tell him how it's a mandate for him to be polygraphed, no, and it was not a requirement when it is joined the police service. As I say, something that more the government in terms of policy, the policy makers is who have to make that kind of decision. But I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the polygraph. I am saying that we have the policy polygraph as a organization. As a matter of fact, to work in certain sections in the police service, there must be polygraph. It's a mandate for it to be polygraph. So it's not that we don't have the polygraph, but is that the average officer in the charge room, in terms of who may have joined the service over, and there will come a time when every single officer in the police service will be polygraphed. Right? So by the time I retire, in some years to come, officers who will not join when they did the polygraph, it means that they will be polygraph officers that within the organization.
Mm.
So I don't know if you understand my point, but as I say, it's more policy decision to be made as opposed to my personal opinion.
All right, Sergeant, PC's Adrian Seely, how you feel?
No, similarly, you know, no, the thing about it, I have been polygraphed, and I'm happy that Sergeant Small mentioned to get into certain sections within the TTPS, it's mandatory that you must be polygraphed. Again, we are law enforcement officers. We are not a law upon ourselves or onto ourselves, rather. So with that being said, I'm certain that there are policy makers right now listening to the program who would have given it some consideration prior, all well and good. But even more than that, and I think I'll be in the right to share my personal opinion on this, where the body cam is concerned.
Yeah.
I welcome the body cam.
Okay.
I welcome the body cam, and the reason why I said I welcome the body cam, again, if it is that I took an oath to uphold what is in the law and I'm doing my executing my duties according to the law, then I have no reason whatsoever to fear the body cam. Now, I understand with the technology, the body cam will not pick up every bit of coverage, but it will pick up certain angles and certain bits and pieces. So this is something too that I would pledge my support behind for transparency, and also as a means of actually building that police legitimacy and public trust and confidence.
Thank you very much for saying that. That is greatly appreciated. I have a call on the line. Hello.
Hi, Davey.
Hi.
And Mr. Seely and...
Small.
Mr. Small.
Sergeant Small, yeah.
Yes. Well, about the focus was really like getting the lesser ones into society and like bringing them back, right?
Mm.
I want to encourage these guys to probably help out or with their good self to enhance the YTEP. I heard that you all mentioned YTEP program. If they could, they should. A little, see how I could listen in a few minutes. I came out from a YTEP program. And I tell you the truth, Davey, when the program finished, the teacher tried to get companies or businesses that will give us some hand-on experience at least for 2 weeks with a small stipend. And I had my education and so, but I just entered YTEP for, to do this course. And I end up in that company after for that 2 weeks. And when that 2 weeks finished, Davey and Mr. Small and Mr. Seely, they did not send me home. They kept me. And I end up staying in that company and managed a branch of that company for 10 years.
Wow. Wow.
What do you praise? So happy to hear this.
Wow, that's a positive story right there. Thank you very much for calling and sharing. That is a great story. So they kept her on. So that is, you know, showing that the YTEP program works. It works.
It certainly does. It certainly does. And again, you see, sometimes the perception with all the accurate information could mislead persons or keep persons away from it. I'm happy, you know, that YTEP instructor or personnel from YTEP really went the extra mile in terms of seeking that degree of connection by means of actually getting some employment. And I don't want to speak out of turn, but that is something that I met when I came into the community police, whereby under the leadership of Sergeant J.C. Small, you know, he was liaising with various businesses within the community. You know, so after these youths come out of school, be it an apprenticeship program or otherwise, it's something that we have done in the police service. Now, many persons may not have heard about it. And that's why I'm always so eager and excited when we have the, you know, the that degree of partnership with the with media to really share some of the messages, because policing has morphed from more just a way till they do something and lock you up. It has a lot of social intervention strategies that really needs to be more out there in the public. We are doing our end from the corporate communications, as the case may be, but it's only that much we can get to. Once it is that we are able to maintain and develop partnerships such as these, we are able to share that message. And in that too, now, Freedom 106.5 is really taking a positive step in terms of contributing positively to the outlook of the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service. And that in itself will harness that degree of positive interaction and partnership with the TTPS as an organization and the stakeholders who we pledge to serve.
Indeed so. Guys, we are a couple of minutes away from the news, and I want to say thank you very much. I think we did really well today. I'm not going to lie. The overdrive today was one that was well packed and put together from that individual that came off the streets, and a positive one with PC Seeley, who could have gone down a road. And what I love about you, PC Seeley, you didn't just come here to give me frills and all that kind of thing, but it was real. If it wasn't for these men, I might have been deceased or incarcerated. And people
that's
need to...
reality.
People, that's it. That's it. We need to be real and honest with ourselves, with how we handle situations. And I'm happy that, you know, I wanna get you guys back next week, when we come back next week, to talk about bridging the gap. Now, when I say bridging the gap, we're talking about it, you know. We're talking about it by the initiatives. Sergeant Small mentioned it, the accolades that was attained on it. But are we really bridging the gap? When we get in
and
the community...
I just want to say that...
Go ahead.
...to be able to stay tuned for the GRACE program, the Bang Reduction and Community Empowerment program that we have rolled out right now. We have a lot of training happening. Almost all the police officers within the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service are going to be trained. You know, we're going to focus on some core aspect of policing, including community policing.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak, we have officers training, and we're going to have ongoing training where we want to reach out to, you know, all the communities that are giving us the crime challenges throughout Trinidad and Tobago. So, you know, kudos to the executive of the police service and our brand new, not new to the police service, but first female commissioner of police. Suits leadership. I feel so proud. I feel honored. She's like a mentor to us all. She's like a mother. She comes through the ranks, and we really appreciate her. And she have our 1,000% support. And I urge the whole of Trinidad and Tobago, support the police service, support the commissioner of police, and support, you know, positivity and, you know, a crime-free Trinidad and Tobago.
Guys, thank you so much for passing through. It was great. PC Seeley, really nice meeting you. Sergeant Small, as always, whomever you wish to have with me next week, we're back here next week, Thursday, to go through this again and continue to foster great relationships between the community and the police. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome.
Thank you as well.
Bless all right, buddies. Take care. And of course, that was Police on You. That concludes this edition of Police on You for this week. And people, we had a great show today, you know. We had a wonderful show. I hope that you all soak in the information well. And I look forward to chatting with you tomorrow inside Freedom Fridays, where we're going to explore various things. Millions of dollars in a fiasco taking place with CPEP. My goodness. We have to talk. Watson Duke wants to become the mayor of Port of Spain. So, I mean, a lot is on the horizon for us to discuss. I also have a little something at a bus for you too. You know, we go and talk tomorrow. Hopefully, you know, we get a chance to do so. But if not, those topics are still on the burners burning. I have a story to drop that was on social media recently. I have to present that to you all when we have a little more time, so we can go into it in depth. You know, people have been sending me information still about relationships and things that they're experiencing, that your views, you the listeners, you the ones that are watching us on the TBC Radio Network.co.tt, you are the ones that we want to hear from. All right? So, it has been a great one. And as always, remember they say love at first sight is often cured by a second look. But once you fall in love with Davy Murray, you will never ever have to look again. Until the next one, when you miss me, I'm gone.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.